You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So we've got a new exciting free beer offer on Footballistically Arsenal. As a loyal listener of the show, we can reward you with free beer thanks to our friends at beer52.com. You have the opportunity to sip 8 free exclusive craft beers from around the world. All you need to do is go to beer52.com/Arsenal and cover just £4.95 for the postage. What's more, Footballistically Arsenal listeners get 2 extra free beers, so that's a total of 10 free beers. And just if you're wondering who Beer 52 are, they are pioneers. They go across the globe to find the best and most interesting beer from the greatest small batch breweries on the planet. And they have themes. They deliver cases with different themes, including Germany, Korea, Norway, South Africa, California, Finland, and many more. And the beauty of Beer 52 is they don't hold you to ransom. There's no lock-in. You can leave any time, but your first box will be sent to you the next day. So just go to beer52.com/Arsenal to get your first case of 8 beers for free. And don't forget, Footballistically Arsenal customers get an extra 2 beers free. That's beer52.com/Arsenal. Hello and welcome to Footballistically Arsenal, the last podcast, not only of the year, but of the decade, Josh.
And the first when Mikel Arteta has been our manager.
And the
mixture of endings and beginnings.
And the first of the Arteta era. Historic night all round, and it's Christmas Eve, year of our Lord 2020. We're joined by 2 tremendous guests. We have Jim Eastlower.
Hello, hi.
Never likes to give away his surname, because it's, well, you know...
If you want,
I must say it's not Jeff.
And I don't like Jeff.
You're not allowed his
Jeff
surname.
Arsenal genuinely doesn't have his surname.
Maybe his surname is Arsenal.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe yours is Eastlower.
Well, no, I should get changed though.
James
Jim Harriet, right?
Harriet. Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Really,
and no relation of Ainsley. Spelled differently for a start, right?
Or James Harriet, which people of a certain age.
Or Creatures Grey and Small. Yeah. Being remade by Channel 5 soon. And we're joined by the great Adam Bernstein. Welcome, Adam. The lifelong chair of the Unai Emery fan club. Welcome.
Thank you.
Boy, I just want to say before we start, I don't know how you have time to be here, because I've just spotted you've got 13,000 unread emails in your phone.
Yeah,
how on earth... without even being OCD, how do you have the number 13,000 creeping up from your mailbox without going mad?
Let me just
mad?
Say, that's not strictly accurate. That's my phone version of my emails that I also access at work. And for some reason, I haven't synced it to the extent where... So at work, that it's fine. Here on this phone, it looks like I haven't read them, but I have, really.
Well, so today you went through 13,000 emails at work?
No, it's
How
just...
How often do you sync
confused.
It?
It's not... Oh, my... It's yeah, there aren't... there aren't 13,000,
yeah. I was going to say, that's a hell of a lot of work to get through over Christmas.
Yeah, don't worry. Don't you worry about it. We've got... Yeah, so it's very exciting. Adam, I'm going to come to you first. You must be thrilled, vindicated, exonerated, etc. Because you have been, I think it's no, I'm no exaggeration to say, you've been the most vehement critic of Unai Emery since day one. You thought he was a useless, I'm paraphrasing, greasy something or other, and now he's gone. You must be, how do you feel?
I think it's good for the club. I think it's a slightly unfair depiction, but whatever, we'll go along with it. Mm. I think the thing with Arteta is that it was always something for risk, and it was a risk 18 months ago, and yeah, sure, he's probably developed a bit in the intervening period, but it's still a risk now, which is why I would rather have done it before, because I think we've already now been through a period of kind of relative decline, and so if it doesn't work out, you're in an even bigger problem. But I think what I always thought with Arteta in comparison to Emery, well, the issue with Emery was that Emery had a ceiling, which was that at best, he might have got you into the top four, he might have squeaked you in there. But like, I think, you know, we had loads of evidence from before to suggest he wasn't a top manager, didn't have a particularly kind of defined style of play, and all of that basically played out over 18 months.
Jim, how are you feeling about it? Were you pro Arteta? Who was your pick of the?
Well, I remember at the time, and I think on balance, I thought Emery was a safer bet because he was more experienced, and Arteta, just as he is now, has never managed a top flight match. So I think that was a safe bet at the time, and it didn't work out. I don't think he's a bad manager. I just don't think he was a good fit for Arsenal, and he didn't. He just never really felt like a good fit to me. Mm. Whereas Arteta feels like a really good fit. Of course, we're just right at the very beginning of the era of the decade, and we have no idea how it'll pan out, whether he'll last 18 months or more or less. I mean, we just don't know. I think it feels more exciting to me. It feels much more exciting.
Josh, we were all in favour of Allegri, I seem to remember, a couple of weeks ago on the podcast.
Well, I think the point Adam makes is a great one. Because after you've had this 18 months of disappointment, largely, and the appointment failed of Unai Emery, you'd have to say,
yeah,
it seems like I thought the club might go what I would call safe. Mm. And that would mean an Allegri or Ancelotti. But they've obviously been relatively bold with it. And probably, is there a feeling if you don't go with Arteta now, is he going to come a third time? Like, even in the first press conference, he was asked, how close were you last time? And it was like a half smile of a very close and a bit like, I thought I had it, which is how it was reported in
but
the
didn't
press.
He also said he wasn't ready as well. He said in one of the interviews,
it's easier to say that when you've then been given it, but I'm sure if he was given the job 18 months ago, he might have told us, he was ready. I suspect in his interview, he didn't go, listen, guys, I'd love to take it. I'm just not the right guy right now. So that's why I thought they'd go Allegri, but it was quite exciting watching that press conference. Now, did you see the little poll that we put out on Twitter straight after the announcement? This was on the Arsenal podcast, and it was sent to you in the notes. I do send about an hour and a half ago, so thanks for looking.
I saw all the things you sent in the notes.
How do you feel about Arteta's appointment as our new manager? 52% said very excited, 37% said excited, 9% indifferent, just 2% unhappy. There's over 1,000 people voting. And after what we've had of what, civil war of the Wenger in, Wenger out, and in the second, well, in this second season of Emery, it's felt like Emery in, Emery out. We very briefly had Arsenal Fan TV in and out for over the weekend, which we'll come on to.
Oh my God, we'll definitely come
but
to
now
that
it feels
later.
Like Arteta in and his positivity around the club, and
that was soon ended by the chant of Arsenal Fan TV, get out of our club. We'll come to that later. Yeah. One thing I was going to mention is that I happen to have spent quite a lot of time with towards of other clubs over the weekend, various people, various social things, and they're all fascinating.
It's a busy social calendar
I've got. But what's interesting is almost uniformly, the attitude from, and I'm not saying I give a shit about this, I'm just relaying it, almost the uniform attitude of other clubs was surprise, particularly that the Everton-Arsenal situation, that Everton have got the, in quotes, one of the greatest coaches of certainly available, you know, right now in the world, with an incredible track record of winning trophies. And Everton's got him, who are, by any stretch of the imagination, not a team of the same stature as us, a club of the same stature as us, I think it's safe to say. And we've gone for the totally untried risk, big risk. Now, I only relay that because I think generally that is the sense from other fans. I think it's weird. And I think if you sit back and look at it for a minute, you're like, oh, it is a bit weird, actually. But having said that, I've completely come around to him. I genuinely thought that press conference, I would have much preferred, I think I might have even preferred Ancelotti a little bit, just on the feeling that someone coming in who's that experienced to kick these useless twats up the arse and sort, because, you know, I think we need sorting out in that way. But
having seen the press conference, and I know it's only one press conference, but I think these things do matter. I said to someone said to me on Twitter, oh, you know, oh, press conferences don't win you games, blah, blah, blah. But I think actually his level of charisma and intelligence and eloquence was what I really was wondering. Is he going to be that charismatic? Because I think you look at Pep Guardiola and you look at Klopp, you look at the real hugely successful managers, and even Pochettino, actually, they're all very charismatic, strong personalities, very eloquent, and they actually talk a really good game. I think that does matter. I think in leadership figures, it's possibly even the most important thing, because presumably there's loads of coaches in the world that are all, you know, what they're doing roughly. I mean, it's not, you know, football isn't that complicated that you don't know roughly. Emery probably, you know, kind of must have had some idea of what he's doing, but I thought he was a charisma vacuum and completely unimpressive as a communicator on so many levels. Whereas Arteta does seem, I don't remember seeing that much of him interviewed until now, and he just seems so eloquent and impressive, and his programme for what I'm going to do with the team and with the players seemed to make so much sense. It was like, it could not have been better.
And it's so stylistic as well, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think, I may be exaggerating the importance of that, but in a way, I don't think I am. Adam, did you watch the press conference?
I've seen clips. But I think it feeds into a wider thing, which is that he needs time, and if you can bring the fans on board and make them excited and make them happy, then, yeah, like, obviously press conferences don't win you matches, but it's still buying you a bit more room to, you know, have some months to kind of implement a philosophy, get to the end of the season, have a full pre-season, etc. So, yeah, I think on that basis. But also, yeah, I think the way he spoke, it's exciting. It shows someone who has, a specific style of play, which they want to implement, who looks like they can communicate effectively with the players, and also looks like someone to me who can actually inspire people, which I think is kind of ultimately what you need in a leader.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
There's, like I said, there's a certain steeliness about him as well. So there's a kind of, he seemed, I mean, I'd love to know, what was that poll that you put out, was that before his press conference or after?
It would have been after.
Yeah, because I was wavering a bit in terms of, you know, he clearly, no big side as big as Arsenal's has taken on a higher
37-year-old this.
Yeah, it just hasn't happened. Yeah. Right? So everyone knows it's a giant gamble. But I watched that. And I was mighty impressed by, like you say, by the way he was communicating, by his steeliness, and just, I suddenly thought, you know, he's the kind of guy that I can see everybody wanting to follow. And whether it works out or not, I just think now we're going to be glued to it a bit, because we just switched off during the Emery press conference here. I think I watched more than one.
Yeah.
Whereas now I'm really, really intrigued. So, and I think it's a risk, but I reckon, you know, you can see, we'll put it this way, you can see what the board saw in him. You really can.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%, yeah.
There was something quite nice about, not nice, but almost fitting, that there he was just over a week ago on the bench at the Emirates, as we were probably the most outplayed we've ever been. Well, we've been in a long time.
No, I wouldn't say that.
No, I really would. At home like that. I felt sorry. I mean, I didn't do the pod last week because I had a lost voice. I didn't get a chance to relay my thoughts. But you felt sorry. I mean, it was absolutely outclassed. So for him to be sitting there, have we ever sat? We never sat like a 10th, 11th, halfway through a Premier League season. He is sitting here watching Arsenal Football Club at our lowest Premier League ebb. And he obviously is strong enough to go, no, I'm good enough to fix this. I'm good enough to get the team back to at least the level it was when I was around at the club as a top four and hopefully beyond that. So I like the fact that he was there for this lowest moment, because I'm now excited and part of this wave of people desperately hoping he can bring us back to some sort of, you know, level that we were used to under the great Arsene Wenger.
What did you make of the controversial reference to him from, was it Willy or Bamiyang or Pierre?
Yes.
Brother dissing him.
Well,
go on.
I'll jump in before Adam. I must say, I spoke to three or four ex-Arsenal players in the last couple of weeks, you know, work-wise. And I would say, to a man, they all felt an experienced coach would be the way to go here.
Yeah.
And if they were in that dressing room, as you know, in their late 20s, 30s, they would want an experienced manager to come in and sort this out, because it's a big, big thing that needs sorting. So that was quite insighting for me in just thinking what a risk this is that Arsenal have taken. And maybe there's a reason you never see, forget even a top six Premier League side. I mean, you can throw an Eddie Howe out there as a young manager, but to have someone coming in that young to try and fix a club of this stature is really unusual. So from the ex-players I spoke to, they were pretty conclusive on wanting an experienced man.
But that's different though, isn't it? The brother of one of the,
I say that because the point was the same thing. He said Arteta, Lundberg, same
thing. I know. Wait, yeah, but what I'm saying is it's
bold.
It's bold slash terrible, for, isn't it, for the brother of one of our most important players to
our
slag
star
off
player.
What
our star player,
our star player, to slag off the new manager before he arrives.
Well, I mean, I think either way, basically, you look at Aubameyang, and you know whoever the manager is who comes in, it's going to take them time. Like realistically, what you're going to take 2.5 years before you could like, even plausibly challenge for a league title if you're being reasonable about it. He's what, 29, 30, and I think they're just trying to engineer a way for him to get out. And if it's because of Arteta, great, but they'll find another reason otherwise.
Mm. That's possibly true.
I also think it's much ado about nothing. I mean, what he said is true. You know, he is an experienced manager, just as Freddie Ljungberg was, and you can understand it. What he shouldn't have done is shot his mouth off on social media. But, you know, like Josh said, I mean, it's can you, on the cover, it's completely true. He's an inexperienced manager.
Yeah. Can you see any way back from... Generally, I feel like Aubameyang's fell, apart from the one game we won, the West Ham game, where they were all hugging each other at the end, and it all seemed nice for about 10 seconds. Aubameyang has looked like a slightly forlorn, pissed-off figure, you know, shouting at the kids for not giving him the perfect through ball, which happened
but
twice.
Who hasn't?
Yeah, all right, but what I'm saying is a lot of people seem to be assuming he's going to leave. Mm. Can you see any way back, though? Can you see that actually he might not leave and that... I feel like... I can see that... My feeling is Arteta... I look at our front players and I feel... I've been saying this for ages generally. Like, I feel like someone like Arteta, with his City experience of knitting together great attacking players into some kind of functioning unit, almost sometimes no matter what they're supposed to be, what their actual general... role is supposed to be, what we know them for. I think he can take Lacazette and Aubameyang and maybe even Ozil and maybe even Pepe and all those players we've got that are, and possibly knit them together into some kind of unit. So I wonder whether that he actually might somehow be able to get Aubameyang to change his mind.
He might be, but I also think that our accounts were announced recently and we're in the red, and there's not a lot of money going around. He's going to want to spend, and there's both of those players, Lacazette and Aubameyang, have what, a year and a half left on their contract.
Yeah.
It wouldn't massively surprise me. So I do think there's a way back for both of them, and I'd love them both to stay. But it wouldn't massively surprise me if he got rid of one of them in either January or definitely, if not January, in the summer, because that's how you raise money, and it's just sensible business, really.
Mm.
And he hasn't even been playing Lacazette recently, so. Almost no, not last three or four games, which is I think a bit odd. But
Freddie's team selection on Saturday felt like a statement to me, didn't it?
Huge statement.
Yeah,
statement of going.
He's backing his guys, isn't he?
Yeah, I want, and it would be fascinating were that not his final hurrah as Arsenal manager, whether he'd have gone with that kind of team. And it's very easy to go, Ozil, you know, wouldn't have been involved even if he was, you know, not injured today because of what he did. And just sort of wonder if you'd make the same selections were it not his last hurrah. But to give Smith Rowe a first Premier League game of the season, bring in Nelson, you know, we've seen very little of him this season.
Brought on Willock before he brought on Lacazette.
And obviously Saka, who actually was excellent at left back, but it was an incredibly
I mean, didn't we have any other option apart from playing Saka, did he? Left back, to be fair to him.
Yeah.
What did you think? What do you think of? I know you're a big Ozil fan, as well as probably like Ozil as much as you dislike Emery. What did you make of those comments about Ozil that he didn't need to say, did he? Because he could.
No.
I was surprised in the pre-match comments. He said it very quickly. I was like, "Hold on, did he actually just say I wasn't going to pick him anyway because of what he did?" And he made that clear.
Clarified afterwards.
What did you make of that?
I think it was a surprise, but I mean, I think in general, if you had a club with a bit more discipline and players made to work harder, like, you know, it would be a good thing on balance overall. So, I think the issue is that for me, it was quite similar to the West Ham game, the game against Everton, that when you got into the last half an hour, it was a bit more stretched. But instead of having kind of Ozil and Pepe to pick through balls, you had Reece Nelson and Smith Rowe, who, you know, might have good careers, but I just think are not players of the same calibre. So,
yeah,
you do have to reap what you sow in that respect as well.
I mean, it was our first clean sheet for, felt like, decades. And it did feel like there was a slightly more disciplined defensive approach, and they didn't have... I mean, they were terrible. Were they terrible in that game? Would we somehow manage to make sure they didn't have a shot on target? And we only had, what, two, maybe three or something? I don't know. Not many. But what did you feel like, too? Did it feel like... I mean, I felt like... I took some heart from the clean sheet.
I mean, I thought where we were offensively absolutely dire, I thought we were defensively pretty strong.
Yeah.
And I think what we had was, it did feel to me like an extra yard of, maybe if not pace, but an extra kind of spring in the step in terms of commitment and closing down and blocking and that kind of thing, which we might not have seen in the last two or three or four weeks. Now, You know, and it did feel to me that they were putting their bodies on the lines a bit more in the defensive part of the game than they would have done a few weeks ago. So I thought that was really encouraging.
Arteta has said that since he felt that they did give him something. You know, he'd gone and asked for hard work and commitment. I mean, you know, very cliche, football requests that a manager might offer as expectations for his team. But it's something to build on, isn't it? And that it was a result that probably suited both teams in the circumstances. Both, you know, bizarre situation of having incoming managers watching from the stands and, you know, probably no one wanting to lose the game. But it was probably the most boring game of the season, would you say?
Yeah, I think so. It was extraordinarily
pretty difficult watching.
Uneventful, wasn't it? Yeah.
I mean, it's the end of the decade. Like, Mike Fast said it was the worst game in the whole decade. So.
Yeah, it could be, couldn't it? I wonder, yeah. Should have done our homework on worst games.
We'll talk about teams of a decade, maybe. I'm not sure. Difficult to pull out a game of a decade being that
6-0
bad.
6-0 at Chelsea on Wenger's 1,000th game scarred me to the...
Oh, no, worst performances by us, but as a dullness. Least eventful game.
Depends what you like. If you like defence, then it was quite good.
Yeah, I thought the most...
Genuinely, clean sheet. I mean, we've been saying, our problem with Arsenal Football Club this season has been defence.
Yeah.
So, on that grounds, if we can have that as a platform, when you bear in mind how, you know, makeshift in a way the back four is having to be at the moment without numerous, you know, potential starters, although it's very hard to tell at the moment who is a first choice defender. So it is something hugely to build upon. And it's just totally intriguing what is going to happen over these sort of Christmas games.
Arteta's first team selection is going to be so interesting, isn't it?
I just don't. What do you think about Ozil? I mean, you know, I don't want to talk about one individual, but I wonder because we had this period of Emery just obviously completely leaving him out, bench, then explode. Yeah. He's then come back not only into the squad but into the team, and then Freddie's made this comment, which is like, you know, that I'd probably bin him off again. I just can't help but wonder now, you've gone from a very young manager, the final hurrah from them are going very young with the team. I wonder if there will be such effort with Ozil. He talks about a clean slate with everyone now, but I don't know if Ozil's going to be a starter here now going forward. Something tells me not.
I mean, for me, it makes absolute sense for him not to be a starter. Yeah. I mean, I can't think of any Man City player who fits, you know, who's anywhere near that kind of, has had any kind of, anything like his attitude or way of playing or, you know, I would be weird to me for him to pick him.
But they are ex-teammates, of course, which is, again, a dynamic that, what have we ever, you know, probably had that situation at Arsenal? I don't know. I'm trying to think, I don't know if George Graham, no, I mean, I don't think we'd have had that situation. I mean, it's a bizarre scenario to walk into, and you wonder if maybe the fact that, you know, he would have seen some of the best that Arsenal fans have seen of Ozil when he was right alongside him, so maybe there's a belief in there that he, you know, can bring it out of him as a former teammate. I don't know.
Jim, what do you think he'll do with Ozil?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I'm worried about how little we're creating at the moment. And having said that, we're not creating a lot with Ozil either.
Yeah.
And I've thought for quite some time now that Ozil is a player of a different era. You know, he's kind of comes from 7 or 8 years ago when you did have time on the ball to do what you wanted. The game is much faster now. And I do feel he's a bit of an anachronism. And perhaps also on the decline, you know, as most people are after the age of 30 in footballing terms, or maybe in all terms. But, so I don't know. I want him to get something out of him and for there to be a path back. But I just wonder whether it's a little bit asking a bit much. But, you know, that's one of his many tasks, isn't it?
Do you feel, Boyd or Adam or Jim, how much of this season is now a free hit for Arteta?
You see, I think in theory, you know, fans always say, oh yeah, you know, it's a free hit, we'll give them, pundits always say they give them 3, 4, 5, you know, transfer windows, give them time, but the reality...
Not realistic.
But now more than ever, I think 5 years ago, you'd have given him, if Wenger had gone when he should have gone, and they brought Arteta in, or someone the equivalent, and you know, they'd have had time, if it had been a kind of civilised, kind of managed handover, I think then fans would have gone, all right, yeah, we've got what we wanted, which is Wenger's sad end period is gone. Now we've got a new guy, let's give him time. But I don't think it's like that now. It's too late for that now. I think the fans are so impatient on every level about everything.
Yeah.
That if the results are... I mean, if the results are fine, then yeah, sure. But if the results carry on being as bad as they have been, i.e. hardly any wins in 6, 7, 8 games, then I think people will be furious with him, as you know, and particularly because there is a still, as per your the survey, but there's still a large percentage of people who find it a bit ridiculous that we've gone for him. What do you think, Adam? Do you think he'll be given time? I mean, fans are fickle, is my thing.
I think the fans are quite unreasonable, and so you have a situation where you're, what, 7-8 points off the top four, but also with, like, quite difficult fixtures to come, like, very bad performances. So ostensibly, you should be like, well, quite clearly not going to get in the top four this season. That's an unreasonable demand. I think there's still quite a lot of people who think that, you know, it could pick up, you have a few wins, you get a bit of momentum, Chelsea and Tottenham aren't very good, etc. And so there's, like, an unreasonable level of expectation that could still happen. So if you view it through a frame of, well, look, actually it'd be quite a good outcome if we actually ended up in the top six this season, notwithstanding it for Europa League again, then, yeah, probably, you know, he'll do quite a good job. But I think that's, you know, the reasonable bar which should be set. And in fact, the bar which is going to be set is something way higher than that, which, like, also given, you know, how we've discussed the issues with various players, is, like, you know, almost impossible to meet.
Yeah. I think if there's a noticeable improvement, I think I would hope that fans will be...
Well, I think it's a total free hit anyway.
Do you? Totally free, but as far as you're concerned, because you're a civilised human being, but
no, I do,
as far as the fans are concerned?
Well, yeah, both, because, well, I think even if it had been someone like Ancelotti, it would have been a free hit, because he's coming into a team that's not not functioning, right?
Mm.
And I don't think there's massive... As long as you don't get relegated, don't think there's any enormous expectations. But I think it's especially a free hit, because everyone knows he's inexperienced and he's learning on the job. So, to me, I think, you know, whatever happens between now and May, as long as... You know, we don't lose anything. 10 in a row.
Right.
Well, if we're getting so bad that we're down in the relegation zone, okay.
Oh, no.
But I'm not expecting that to happen. And I do think ultimately, you know,
and it's a weird situation, isn't it? We're the same number of points roughly from the relegation zone as we are the top four.
Nearer the relegation.
Nearer the relegation.
Eight from the relegation,
but
nine from the top four.
But equally, we're, what, 3 points behind Spurs?
Not a lot, no.
You know, there's this weird. The league is very odd, I feel like, this season. Like Man U, Spurs,
correct,
us.
But we are 11th.
You know, I know we're 11th, but it's each, you know, this season is different to other seasons. All these teams, I feel like Man U and Spurs are capable of being shit as much as we are capable of being shit. And actually, in the end, you could see us. I think if we're competing for fifth, sixth, as you're saying, Adam, which feels entirely like possible, then I think the fans would be okay.
To come sixth would require quite a lot of improvement.
I don't think it'll be... it requires some improvement, but not as much as you think, because we're only 3 points off Spurs, aren't we? So it's one win, you know? Think how many points City are off Liverpool. Because
I think there's
quite a lot of teams above
us. His first three games are away at Bournemouth.
Oh, yeah.
And then we've got to play Chelsea United.
Sure.
So it could very soon be, you know...
We could have, exactly, we could have anything from...
But it could be worse.
Any number of
those games are at home. It could be worse. They could be away.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll talk more about what we think of the current situation at Arsenal. And we're going to have the Arsenal fan TV conversation after this break.
Hello and welcome to Seeing Red, a true crime podcast brought to you by me, Mark, and my co-host, Bethan. Each week we take a deep dive into the dark world of true crime. Cases have ranged from the murder of Christina Abbott, a high-class escort who was killed by a sadistic client, to the Peru 2, a pair of young women convicted of smuggling drugs in South America. Whilst always respectful to the victims of these crimes, we do like to tell each story in our own unique style, with humour and lots of f***ing swearing. Join us every Wednesday for a new episode of Seeing Red, a true crime podcast, wherever you get yours.
And we're back from the break. We should also talk about, he's brought in his coaching team. Today it was confirmed that Freddie would be part of it, which seems, I mean, on a human level, he was given the worst, the most poisoned of all chalices, wasn't he? And he's, you know, clearly a great guy. You know, he's done his best. Hasn't been... To have got rid of him would have felt cruel, harsh. I know we're supposed to be ruthless and everything, but that would have felt...
Well, ridiculous. I think internally there'd have been pressure to try and find a way to be involved, because they've swapped him over with Steve Bould, haven't they? So Bould's gone back to doing the under-23s. Freddie's been promoted. To then, you know, 4 or 5 months into that, find himself unemployed would have felt incredibly harsh. And also, look, it's probably not the worst thing to have someone who has been around the players for, you know, a good period of time to try and help the new coaching team. But yeah, it was quite an awkward conversation, wasn't it, in the press conference when he was being asked. And he's like, well, we haven't really had a conversation yet, but seemingly they've sorted it all out. And they also announced today about Steve Round.
Yeah, Steve Round was at the game sitting, and they hadn't even announced him yet. It was kind of obvious. But everyone says that he's a really good coach. I mean, I've had three, four people, different people, who seem to know about these things texting me saying, especially brilliant, blah, blah, blah. But generally, you know, the whole thing seems quite... the most interesting thing about the whole game was watching him from the stands, Arteta kind of looking enigmatic.
Did you watch the video the Arsenal website put out, like behind the scenes on Arteta's day?
When he went to giving Per a hug around the computer.
And he asked, do we have drones? That was my favourite highlight of him on the train. Yeah. And he was much relieved. Glad to see our season tickets aren't going up anymore to pay for Arteta's drones.
I don't think drones are that expensive these days.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
Probably by several, actually, with your club-level season ticket.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was called a club-level wanker over the weekend for the first time in a long time.
By Dermot?
I mean, I am.
By Dermot?
Not by Dermot, no, I am. But about this Arsenal Fan TV thing. Let's get into the Arsenal Fan TV thing. So what seemed to have happened was, first of all, there was an audible chant of Arsenal Fan TV, get out of our club. Was that the chant? Yeah. Then there was this melee, as I'm calling it, afterwards, where, I don't know, 30, 50 people surrounded Robbie and the Arsenal Fan TV guys. And it was... it looked like uncomfortable to what I wasn't there. I don't know. It just looked... For me, it looked like bullying to me. And I tweeted about it saying it felt like bullying. And that, you know, if you really hate them that much, just ignore them. You, Adam, tweeted very eloquently. Should we read out your tweet? Do you remember what you said? Do you mind if we read out it? Because it was very interesting. It was a very interesting observation. Here we go. You said... I find it thoroughly bizarre argument which says, I don't like AFTV, so I don't watch it. Others can make the same choice. Insofar as it's true, but missing the point. Unless we actively campaign against it, it is taken by lots of people to be representative of fan views. It's also clearly influencing fan views. I'm not saying they're the only cause, but they feed off extremism. Low, you end up with situations like Xhaka being booed off, hate towards Hector. Is Hector hated by anyone?
They sort of complain about him being interested in politics, fashion.
Those people can fuck off, yeah. They make people angrier, making the matchday experience for others much worse. And the fact they're embarrassing and feed off division isn't just bad in of itself, it also damages the brand of Arsenal and makes players less likely to sign. Now that's controversial. And less likely to stay, reinforcing our decline and helping to perpetuate it. So quite happy to criticise them. So you're telling me that... If a player comes to sign, like, you know, I don't know, Tierney in the last, or whatever, goes, someone goes, if you have Arsenal Fan TV, do you really want to play for them?
Before he answers that, I want to tell you something. I'm dealing with someone not long retired in the game whose awareness and understanding of Arsenal Fan TV blew my mind. This is someone who's, you know, been a Premier League footballer fairly recently. And they felt really strongly, surprised me, because I just thought, you know, you've been playing Premier football, you're in a, you know, certain, you know, tier of celebrity and wealth. How could you possibly worry about what people on a camera are saying to you outside? Mm. And they were really aware of it and said, look, you know, footballers are just not immune to this kind of thing of, you know, seeing the abuse that they get. They're probably, you know, bold enough to not reply. And yes, we live in a day and age where, you know, Rebecca Vardy can blame her PR people for controlling her social media accounts. But the actual... you know, celebrity or that horrible word, talent themselves, is aware of it. And so this horrible negativity that has, like, come directed by, I just think, just a few of the people on the channel, and I think that's the most important thing to make. I think most people that are angry are about a couple of individuals, and I largely would defend the channel and will. But it really amazed me how aware some of the actual players are aware of
and
the
channel. And yet Troops is best mates with Aubameyang. That was quite interesting, your comments, Adam. Do you stand by it? You think it's that important an issue?
Yeah, I mean, look, I see what you're saying, that some of my conclusions seem a bit detached from the original crime. But there's a general point of they kind of create a culture where it's deemed like reasonable to send abuse to footballers on their Instagram and stuff like that, etc., etc. And like, clearly they do read this stuff, not just from what Josh is saying, but also from like Xhaka disabling comments on his Instagram. Such was the level of abuse he was getting. I think when I've been on this podcast before, we've discussed like in the debate, the Niles like politely responding to these people. And yeah, like I do think that them sort of, they love these videos where there's no nuance. And ultimately, in terms of kind of, look, they're surrounding them outside the ground, whatever. But in terms of the specific point of the chant and shouting "Fuck off, Arsenal fan TV," like you can't tackle their populism with some like nuanced discussion on a podcast for 15 minutes. Like in a football stadium, like we don't sing "We love you, Arsenal," we do apart from when you commit, you know, horrendous defensive howlers. Like these things have to kind of, you know, be a pithy soundbite, and I think that pithy soundbite is quite effective because it's not going to hound them out of the club, it's not going to censor them, it's merely going to make the point that there's a large, probably majority of people who don't agree with these people, who don't agree with Arsenal fan TV. And like, whenever I chat to people about, or not whenever, but often when I chat to people about football, they think that Arsenal fan TV is representative of the club, or they ask me about people's videos and what I think about them. And so, like, I'm quite happy for, you know, us to make a stand. I'm not saying it should be like our number one chant in the stand, but like, I think it's something, yeah, we can chant at an away game once in a while.
What is the... What exactly is the... Like, what do you want them to do, is my question. Not you specifically, but the people... Yeah. First of all, what I'd say about the whole social media thing, I think that's completely different. I think people have been sending offensive messages on social media since players were accessible on social media. Yeah. That's to do with the accessibility of them on social media. And people were booing off players before social media existed. And Arsenal fans have been very horrible to certain players in our history. As you know, you've been following the team for years. So I just don't feel it's a new... I think blaming Arsenal fan TV for toxicity, when that toxicity has absolutely been there for years and years.
It exacerbates the issue.
But, well, in that case, if it exacerbates the issue, does it reflect the issue? Doesn't it reflect what... I mean, if fans are absolutely divided over, for example, things like Arsene Wenger in the latter years, in the last period... It's a reflection of that. They didn't start that. They didn't instigate
But the superstars of Arsenal fan TV, so I don't want to call them superstars.
You just have.
Are not the people who are sort of making balanced comments. People shouting, Giroud is fucking shit. You know, like, that's what gets you the views.
Sure, but...
Is it? Can I ask in a different way? Your problem doesn't seem to be a problem with the channel as a concept. It's some of the content. So are you just suggesting there should be some level of censorship? Because all I can say, and I'll come on to it, I texted Robbie after I saw it on Saturday night. The only thing, I just have, from an entrepreneurial respect for what Robbie's done, I just think, unbelievable. The bloke started with a camera himself outside a stadium. So he's got, I believe he now employs 6 or 8 people, I can't remember which, one of the two. And so just from an entrepreneurial thing, it's incredible what he's done. And others have tried to replicate. He has tried to help others. Even the Everton lads on Saturday, who there's a guy called Pete McParney, who I very, very vaguely know. I saw his tweets about saying how much Robbie had done to try and help them start their Toffee TV. And he has done that around, you know, around the country. But maybe the only thing I would look to is to go, there seems to be very little, if any, censorship. So if you do get a situation where people are just being... absolute dogs abuse in a way that I don't think they can point at TalkSport and go, you do the same. Because if you rang up TalkSport and you were effing and blinding and calling someone a C-word this, and you wouldn't be allowed on air.
Of course, yeah.
And that may be, I don't know. I don't know what Robbie wants to do but about censoring any of the content. I sense he doesn't.
I don't know what you think, Jim. My take on it is slightly that. I feel there were... I mean, I'll be honest with you. I've only ever watched 5 minutes of Arsenal Fan TV in my entire life. And that was when Robbie came on this podcast as a guest. I felt I had to do
he used to come on quite regularly.
Yeah, but I just don't have the time or inclination to watch idiots, with all due respect. You know, because they are amplified. The idiot, I think to take...
Idiots is a bit strong, board, I'd say.
I think it's a microcosm of the internet, full stop.
Right, so okay.
You've got a lot of new... You've got a lot of people go on there, and they've got... And they're very, you know, contextual, and everything they say is very reasonable. And you've got the people that ultimately like the sound of their own voice. It's no different to anywhere else. Yeah. I do think there's a generational thing. Again, it's slightly anecdotal, but I've got a teenage son. He loves it, right? Mm. So he says, oh, Troops is in New York. X and Robbie says this, Robbie says that. I don't watch it. Yeah. And I'm a middle-aged man. He's a 14-year-old kid. And a lot of his mates who are also fans, they also watch it. So I think it's like... We've grown up where we kind of consume stuff a bit on blog, you know, on blogs or and podcasts and this kind of stuff, written content, where you do have time to be a bit more, you think about stuff. But they don't do that. So they watch YouTube all the time. Yeah, they don't watch terrestrial telly. I'm sorry to tell you this, Boyd, but they just...
I'm aware.
You know this, I know. But my kids, they just straight on the YouTube, whether it's about basketball or football or Minecraft, whatever the hell.
Here's my question. They're not taking it seriously, are they? They're not sitting there going, it's entertainment, isn't it?
Well,
it's...
I don't know. I don't know at what age you understand what the nuance is there. So I do, yeah, I do think...
But their superstars, as you put it, Adam, have become famous by being over the top, expressing themselves in an extremely colourful, ludicrous. I just can't take it seriously. And I think I saw people. I had a storm. I've never had, honestly, even going back to the days of Arsene Wenger, I haven't had so many people liking why I tweeted and saying you're right, B, calling me a twat and a club level wanker, as I have this weekend. Honestly, it's been exhausting.
I mean, I think it does become a parody in itself.
How seriously and obsessed people are with it.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, it's
well the fact we're talking about it.
I know.
So you need
I think
know.
We have to because it has become a thing. But to me, you're expending a fucking lot of energy on something that's just entertainment. Yeah. And to people going, oh, they're exploiting the club, they're making money. We're all fucking talking about. What we like, our team, our podcast. I mean, we haven't made any money off this podcast in 10 years. But, you know, if we had have done, I would have been perfectly happy about it. You can't blame them for making money out of their business
because it's
venture.
Your choice. They're not forcing you to watch it.
And,
and they're not standing outside the away end, blocking you getting in.
And what is certainly happening is their business model is, Adam, isn't it? It's people talking about it. Ignoring it, if you really hate it, and like people are saying to me, you can't ignore things in this day of social media. I don't understand why not. Of course you can.
Of course you can. You block things.
But they're influencers. That was Josh said. What they've got over a million subscribers on YouTube.
1.1 million.
And that's influencing like wider fan opinions.
But how do you know?
You can say they're not into it because I went like I saw my. Had a little family bar mitzvah the other week. I saw my 15-year-old cousin, big Arsenal fan. Always wants to talk about Arsenal. He's genuinely. Doing a bit like Jim said, he's quoting me what Troops has said. I haven't watched it. He's telling me what Troops has said. That is, in a way that obviously he's got his mates in the playground, some of whom will support Arsenal, others who won't. And because he doesn't go to loads of games, he doesn't have a group of mates who he talks about going to games with, his barometer is a little bit set by people like Troops and I think DT and probably a few of the others who are regulars or semi-regulars on there. So they are influencing.
But people are perfectly capable of making up their own mind, aren't they? I'm sure he doesn't agree blindly with every single thing Troop says. I didn't agree with every single thing that any pundit on TV said about Arsenal or any player said.
I'm just saying they do have some influence.
But they're not brainwashing people, are they?
But people are capable of making up their own mind, but that's a consequence of the media they consume. If I read the Daily Express every day, I'd probably be concerned about Princess Diana's cause of death. I don't, so I'm not. And ultimately, if you keep on watching Arsenal fan TV, you probably are going to have opinions which are not at all nuanced.
Well, what do you think? Okay, so in the end, what do you think should be done about it?
Well, I'm hoping that them, realising there's quite a lot of negative fan sentiment to them, for example, might end up with them moderating their tone, or for example...
But do you actually watch it?
Or having a wider range of people. No, I don't watch it.
So how do we know that they don't have as many people on there that are being perfectly reasonable as they are as Troops DT and all the others?
I'll defend Robbie. This is what Robbie would 100% say, and he is right. I would say on average, from what I see and what I hear him say, and he was on TalkSport having a really lengthy conversation with Simon Jordan about the channel and its toxicity.
I thought he absolutely destroyed Simon Jordan on that conversation.
Yeah. I think it's about 20 videos probably done a game, and there are always new faces, but unashamedly he would say, look, DT and True and some of the other people that come on the channel are a lot more popular, and therefore their views are always... going to be, viewed by a lot more people. What was interesting, a few of my mates, who some of whom watch channels, some who don't, were talking about it, is to say there is something that is tough to deny, that if you look at the top, I think top 20 videos that they've had on their channel, I think 19 were immediately after defeats. There was kind of these rants that are given immediately after defeats. So he can't...
That's not surprising, is it?
Not surprising, but it's kind of it then gives some strength to the argument, people going, oh, well, they revel in, defeats. But at the bottom of the heart of it, I really think from having known Robbie, where I honestly don't think he could have dreamt of what it became, having known him better in those days, there is a real genuine fan at heart. There is... someone who loves the club, who wishes we were winning every game, who really believes in kind of giving fans a voice and free speech. I would only just wonder, could there be a bit of censorship when people are being, could a cross is crossing the line in terms of abuse directed? And I don't care if you're a celebrity. I think there's a line. You shouldn't be abusing a player and their performance and telling them to F this and C that. That just makes me uncomfortable.
I have seen
a few clips where it's been a Xhaka this and a few other players have been picked out for what seems too much abuse. Never from Robbie. Robbie always seems incredibly level-headed in the face.
But he's the facilitator.
But that, I just think if you have no censorship at all, and that's why, as I said, I don't think you can say it's exactly the same as a TalkSport or any other outlet who revels in fan opinion.
He must edit it, doesn't he? He doesn't just pull out everything the whole thing. Does he go for hours on end? I don't know.
No, but I'm wondering, like, I'm saying, I don't know. Obviously, I have no insight whatsoever as to what doesn't get uploaded. But I'm saying, it looks like from what does get uploaded, that there hasn't been too much going, do you know what, it's a bit much there to sort of, the abuse a certain individual seems to be getting.
We've got to move on. To conclude, I just feel like this feels another thing to be divisive about. I feel like if we just didn't get so worked up about them, then why then it's not going to get people worked up. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
You could argue it's having, you know, you talk about the brand, you know, and the effect it might have on the brand or otherwise. You could argue the other way. You could go, well, you know, Arsenal have the biggest fan channel around the world in football, that must be attracting a serious audience from abroad. Is that actually bringing people in?
And actually,
because they want to come to the club and go to a game and then hang around and maybe get interviewed by Arsenal Fan TV. So,
and most that's other fans, interesting. To talk about most other fans, to me, think it's a joke. I've never met a fan in my life who thinks
that. Well, I think a lot of people watch it to have a bit of a laugh, to be honest. But
And I think what I can see they have done is they are developing the content. There are shows now. There is a Young Gun show. I think Robbie mentioned he's starting a women's Arsenal football show. So that might have, you know, a positive impact on growing awareness around this. So I think, you know, there are real positives to come out for it. It's just, I remember being at Brighton away and talking on the podcast a year and a half ago as Wenger came to the end of his reign, and how horrifically toxic it felt just being in the away end and people genuinely having like fist fights about Wenger in, Wenger out. How dare you like sing against Wenger? Away fan.
Hold on, you're blaming Arsenal Fan TV for that?
No, I'm talking about the point. I'm saying that was horrible. And the idea of being in away end again and having like a bunch of people singing against those people over there.
Yeah,
physical. It's dreadful. So
just let them do what they want to do. I don't get it.
I just think, you know, probably outside an away ground when the, you know, the anger is high is not the right time. I don't know if Robbie has any intention of sitting down with people and listening to any genuine concerns they have, but it didn't look like the kind of people that want to have a sit down sort of chat about it. But it's going nowhere. 1.1 million subscribers, incredible.
Very it's not going away. You mean
it's not going?
You said it's not going. It's not. It's going nowhere. It's going up.
It's
not going up.
It's very much sticking around.
Anyway,
and fair play to him.
Let's not fucking talk about Arsenal Fan TV any longer, because we've got a team of the decade to talk about.
Well, Paul Merson did his.
Paul Merson
read it out,
boy. Yes, Chesney. I think any disagreement.
No,
it's got to be Chesney. Now, of course, in classic Paul Merson style, with all due respect to the great man, he's only picked three defenders. Whether that's the reflection, I mean, it is a kind of slightly fair reflection on the shitness of our defence, but he's picked Sanya. I think that's fair, isn't it?
Yeah.
Koscielny.
Yeah.
Koscielny, statistically, I saw a statistical thing saying that he is our top performer over the decade, like purely measuring some
average
scientific, by thing. I mean, Monreal, again, seems so. Now, I think we should probably throw in another defender.
I'd go Tommy Vermaelen.
Tommy Vermaelen.
Thomas Vermaelen would be my fourth.
How much did he play in this decade?
Yeah, he was around for a bit of it. Okay. I did have it up. He was with the club until 2014. Yeah.
Okay. Adam, any feelings about who you'd throw in?
I wouldn't have Vermaelen. I'd have maybe have Mertesacker or. Yeah. I mean, given these things are basically, you're not picking people in position anyway, you could have two right-backs and have Hector Bellerin as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is true. I'd pick Hector, I think, yeah. I'd be tempted.
Ahead of Sanya? Or as well as?
Both, yeah.
Possibly.
Okay.
Yeah. That is weird. I mean, I'd
argue loosely to do something that could be a team.
Yeah.
No, there are no rules.
Favourite players.
I didn't realise we could just pick the best player at the
position. I don't think we'd have many defenders if we just play eight.
Sanya played a centre-back for a bit. But also, if you look at the midfield, Paul Merson's picked. I mean, I think you're going to read it out.
Yeah, yeah, the formation.
It's clearly not a real team.
Yeah, it's not. No, exactly. It's crazy, yeah. So he's then got this kind of four. He's got Ozil, Ramsey. Now, I'm sure. I mean, even I have critical Ozil. I'd have him in the decade's team. I think it's. And Ramsey, I definitely have in the decade's team.
Sami Naseri?
No, I don't think so.
Cazorla?
No. Cazorla, I'd have. Cazorla is in his team, along with Wilshere. So he's got. I wouldn't have Wilshere. I think Wilshere had like a couple of brilliant games, but.
No, more than that, come on.
No, brilliant games.
Yeah, one phenomenal season. Yeah.
One
and phenomenal
then
struggle
one
after
really
that.
Good season.
Yeah.
One game, you know, against Barcelona, where he was like going to be suddenly turned into a world class player, never fulfilled. It's partly because of the injuries, but I don't feel he's like in the team of the decade. Adam, any?
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't have Wilshere. I'd maybe have Mikel Arteta, to be honest.
I mean, in terms of being at the club for quite performances, he was in there a lot. For me, I associate him with the tedious period of the football we played,
which was much better than the last 2 years.
Well, barely. It's up front, I feel, we're going to have the most argument.
Robin Van Persie has to be there, as much as we then don't just love
him. Yeah, I'm fine with Van Persie. Yeah, I mean, Van Persie, sure. Now, he's Sanchez.
Yeah, you got to.
I would go with
How long is it going to take for boys to mention Walcott?
Well, I am going to mention Walcott.
Okay.
Massively underrated. Scored 105 goals. You know, absolutely should be in there.
Here's something
or,
I drew a bit
or was he massively overrated, Boyd?
Absolutely not, no. He was you know, unfairly abused by some Arsenal fans. But I associate Theo with some of our most exciting games. In fact, off the top of my head, I haven't done any research, but the games in the period where Theo was playing with Sanchez sometimes, not often enough possibly, were some of the most exciting games of that whole period, you know, and people forget those games. People forget, and he had a lot of injuries.
But I think that's him in a nutshell, is that he made big impacts on some games, but the bigger picture is, I mean, you know, is that he often made no impact. I mean, he was an interesting player. Like, he's not, it's the same thing happening in Everton, isn't it, with him?
Oh, yeah, but I mean, you know, that's...
I mean, he's on the decline now. I mean, he definitely had some bad games, but I think he was someone who was basically burdened with kind of ridiculous expectations of expected to be, you know, the best winger of all
wingers are, aren't they? I
mean, he was, like, somebody who was just very, very good, and if you could view him through that prism, I'd definitely pick him.
And when he was given the chance to play up front, I think he never let us down. I always think the games he played, you know, which was what is his thing, wasn't it? There was that constant thing, can I play up front? And every now and then he was allowed to. And generally, he scored goals. And Giroud. Now, he's picked Giroud. I'm sorry, I've got to pick Aubameyang over Giroud. I mean, you know Giroud's scoring record? I looked up this stat. Giroud's scoring record, he played 225 games, scored 78 goals, 28 assists. It's just, I know people
it's not
go...
not terrible, Boyd, especially given...
I mean, Lacazette...
Hold-up play and...
The comparison, he's 0.17 goals per game, which for a striker, Lacazette's already on 0.36.
Who is 0.17?
Giroud.
That doesn't make sense. How many goals did you say?
225 games, 78 goals.
That ratio can't be right.
Well, and you know,
he can't be right.
And I know people say, he like,
that's like 0.3.
I know people say, you know, he did a lot of stuff apart from scoring, and you know, but his assist record isn't great either. What's so,
it, boy, we've got to get this right. Our listeners don't want to get this right. 78.
Don't come to me for the maths chat, lads.
Goals, 33%.
Oh, all right. Well, anyway,
0.33.
It's
getting back in your team, Giroud.
There's just no comparison. Aubameyang is just a much better player in every sense. What, you know, to pick...
No, I wouldn't put Giroud.
It's insane. So anyway, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I still wouldn't put Giroud. But I just think, yeah, we've got to get the maths right. As a Treasury official,
Any thoughts on the worst team of a decade? I saw a lot of people on Twitter trying to get the worst team of the decade. Maybe we'll put out a poll looking for that one. I put a few names together that I thought. Lichtsteiner.
Yes.
Santos, Jenkinson, Squillaci, Elneny, Jovinho, Shamak, Sonogo, Park, and I had to stick another midfielder and was struggling, so I put in Miyachi. That's probably a bit harsh because I think the guy was literally on loan for the entire spell that he was at Arsenal.
What about the ageing Man U defender we brought in?
Silvestre.
Yeah, Silvestre.
Potential shout.
Surely got to be in there. And a back injury guy.
Kim Kjellström. Kim Kjellström could have made an appearance.
He wasn't that bad. He just didn't really play.
Just had seven games. I mean, it's a bit little.
What about the guy we had on loan last season?
Who?
Dennis Suarez.
Dennis Suarez. Yeah, that was a complete farce, wasn't it? Yeah, that was embarrassing.
I'd have him in there.
Jovinho, weirdly, was one who got better when he left, which is very... Wenger always used to say, not many players do.
No, actually,
he actually did, so I don't know what that was all about.
Yeah. Who's your absolute favourite player of the decade?
Of the decade?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I did love Sanchez's work rate and just the fact he used to lift the team up by his bootstraps. Yeah. And I just thought he came in at the time when the team didn't really have that kind of energy and he definitely had it. But can we pick, like, Fabregas at the very beginning of the decade? I don't know.
Well, it's Fabregas' issue, because he was at the beginning, wasn't he? Yeah, but his final season wasn't great. He had loads of injuries, didn't he?
I think, do you know, but overall, I'd say someone like Ramsey probably sums up the team in a better way than those guys, just for lots of different reasons. I really did like Ramsey a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think I also would have chosen Ramsey, but I'd also give big shout-out to Sanya and also to... like Mesut Ozil. Now, ultimately, I know that people don't like him, but when he was signed, we hadn't won a trophy in 8 years. Mm. Then we went and won 3 trophies in 4 years.
Yeah.
Challenged for the league title. Like, whatever your views on him now, I think that is like something we shouldn't get discounted.
Oh, I mean, the signing, it was one of the most exciting signings, for sure, in the early days.
Like Cazorla.
Yeah, because I love Cazorla. Always says he's overrated, doesn't he? Alan Alger always says he's... but that's...
There's a few of them. I'd have probably gone Sanchez. I think I'm with you.
Mm. Yeah,
just
me
turning
too.
Up and thinking, here is a player who can win us the game today, who could produce something out of nothing more than...
And that was the season where he scored like 30 goals, wasn't there? From wide. He was our... Like now, there's those are those players, aren't there, who are kind of wide players that are wide forwards that are scoring loads of goals. He was our one of those, at least for a couple of seasons. And then subsequent happened to is just mystifying, isn't it?
I did see a lot of people trying to put up what was the Arsenal team of the 2000s against this team. And gosh, you would... It might be a mismatch akin to the Man City Arsenal game from last week if you had to face those two teams. But alas, let's hope for more from the 2020s, Boyd.
Yes. Now,
talking of which, we can go up to a couple of games, and then we've got our first game of 2020 is Man United, isn't it? But we've got Bournemouth first got to talk Bournemouth, about on Boxing
we've
Day.
We've got a lot of predictions to do. I'm sorry.
Four games before we pod next.
I mean, they are completely pointless, but it's a tradition going back 8-9 years. So how long have we been doing this fucking podcast?
I think you've been doing it 8.
Yeah, I think it's been 8. It's been a long trail, Adam. The first game, Bournemouth away on Boxing Day.
Arteta's first game.
Yeah, I'm so excited
in the dugout
by this team news mainly. What do you think is going to happen
on Amazon Prime?
It's impossible to sell on Amazon Prime. Yeah,
I think we're going to win.
Yeah,
2-0.
Like it.
Yeah. Jim? Well, this miserable sod has drunk the Arteta Kool-Aid at least for that game. I think we're going to win that as well. I don't know what the score is. Do I have to say the actual score?
Of course.
Obviously we'll let a goal in.
Yeah.
2-1.
Okay.
Take a 1-0 draw. 1-0 draw. Boyd?
I say 2-1 as well.
Wow. Very positive belief in Arteta.
Yeah. Then the Arsenal-Chelsea on Sunday. And that's tough, isn't it? Because Chelsea did really brilliantly against Spurs.
Terrific.
But they were a bit shit in the previous couple of games. What do you reckon, Adam?
I think we're going to win again. Why not? Might be the Prosecco.
Yeah.
Are we thank you to Jim for the Prosecco.
Yes, thank you to Jim for the Prosecco.
You're welcome.
2-1.
Jim?
No, I think a draw. I think it's going to be a draw.
Yeah.
Maybe 1-1.
Yeah, I think 2-2 draw. Josh?
1-1. I think we'll draw that one.
And finally, before we come back, when are we, so we're going to be back on...
we'll be back because we're playing Leeds United on the Monday the 6th. We'll be back on Tuesday the 7th. I think we'll beat Manchester United. I'm hoping for 5 points from these three Premier League games, I'll tell you. I think a 2-1 win against Manchester United.
I'm going to say 2-1 as well.
I think a draw, 1-1.
Yeah.
I think they're a funny side because they seem to go to the level of the team they're up against. So
they have got much better results against better teams.
Yeah, so... God. What am I going to say for this one? Yeah, I'm going to say... I think we're going to nick a win. Nick a win. 1-0? Can that even be possible?
Yeah. Okay. Well, barely.
Barely. 1-0.
Maybe he's going to tighten up the defence that much between now and then.
And then we face Leeds United in the FA Cup, which is the last game before we come back to doing podcasting. There's going to be a lot of Leeds United fans in the stadium. So I think not only have they got, I think, the 9,000, and then if people I know from Leeds are anything to go by who have been asking around for tickets in the Arsenal end, I think there is going to be one of those nights where there's a lot of fans leaping up if they do get a goal. Alas.
And what's going to happen? It was all very well...
I think, we obviously don't have any Carabao Cup. The league is going to be the league this year. I would like to think we're going to give the FA Cup a real go and put out a strong team and squeak by again, sort of 2-1 Arsenal.
I hate making predictions in the Cups without any team news. That's my big caveat. We should beat Leeds. We're better than Leeds.
Yeah.
3-1.
I thought 3-1 as well. This is a preposterous waste of time, Jim, but what do you think?
Win Henri off the bench.
Yes.
There's also the argument going, well, it's not Leeds' it's priority. I mean, they are doing really well in the Championship. Yeah. Hell, do they need to get back into the Premier League? Might not be the worst for them to put in a credible performance and concentrate back on the league.
Well, all I can say is it's been a glorious decade. Thanks to Josh
for all your help.
Thanks to Leon for letting us drone on for hours. The engineer, etc. Thank you to Adam. Thank you for Jim Eastlower. And we'll be back.
Back in 2020.
And apologies for my maths. I mean, I don't know. Who knows how it works?
No, it's definitely 2020.
Yeah. It's definitely great. I got that right. Thanks. Bye.
This is a Playback Media production. To listen to all our football podcasts, visit playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.